This is Nation Radio with Alan Mitchell, a.k.a. Low Tide. Presented by Edmonton Motors.
Only on Edmonton Sports Radio.
Team 1260.
Don't forget, we have the NLL final today, 5:30, with Jason Greger, Rochester, and your Edmonton Rush, right here on Team 1260. Stay tuned for that. Have an update for you. It's 2-0 now, the Rangers up on the New Jersey Devils. There's just a few minutes left in the game. Dan Girardi and then Chris Kreider scoring for the New York Rangers. I still think it's going to be a Ranger-LA King final. That should be good. Honestly, I don't remember the last team that looked as good this long during the Stanley Cup playoffs is the Los Angeles Kings. They have that kind of look where, you know, they're going to be strong this year and next year. And I, from my point of view, I just have a feeling that the LA Kings are going to win it all. I'm going to go out on a limb. They're, what, 10-1? Really, Al? Yeah, that's how I feel. I think LA is going to win this thing. Joined now by Bruce McCurdy from the Cult of Hockey. How are you, buddy?
Good, thanks. How about yourself, Alan?
Well, I'm good. Are you doing lots of hard work on the long weekend?
Well, if you call watching sports hard work, I do a lot of that, quite a lot of the time, actually.
Now, you're a little older than me, and I don't want to put you on the spot or anything, but doesn't it feel weird having a Saturday afternoon game and then no Saturday night game?
Well, it feels doubly weird when you realize that they're putting the Saturday afternoon game directly against the Champions League final. And this is the second week in a row the NHL has shot themselves in the foot by putting on a daytime game against direct competition. Last week it was the Canada-USA game at the World Championships that kind of got backburnered by some people, and other people, you know, didn't watch the NHL as a result of the clash. Like, they've got to be hurting their own audience. And I guess the Canadian audience and the Hockey Night in Canada window, that's of secondary importance. Or they've been chasing this American TV market for, what, 50 years now, as long as I've been watching.
Yeah, for sure. I remember reading in the hockey news, you know, CBS picks up contract, 6 games this year, and it was a big deal.
Exactly.
And that was like 1968. And it was
right after expansion, ever since.
Yeah, it's true. And my thing is, I don't blame the city of Atlanta or its people for wanting to go outside on a beautiful day and not go watch a hockey game. There's lots to do. You know, you throw that puppy in Winnipeg during the winter time and everybody's going to the game. It just makes sense, right?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, absolutely.
Yeah. So let's talk a little bit about the Edmonton Oil Kings are up 1-0. That was a crazy game. What was your assessment of the video goal fiasco? Regwald wanted your input.
That was a complete fiasco. That's one of the worst calls I've not only ever seen but ever heard. To hear the comical exchange between the referee and the man upstairs, as they call him, they seem to be talking right past each other. I think they blew that, by my count, they blew that call 4 different ways. Fortunately, they didn't give Schwinnigan 4 extra points for each one of those mistakes, but that was just, it was a horrific sequence of blunders.
It reminds me of every conversation I've ever had with my wife. Same exact thing, you know? I'm saying one thing while she's talking, you know? And she doesn't hear me. So what are you going to do? How big of an item is winning that first game? I talked to Kent Simpson a second ago about the fact that that's a big game, but how big is it?
It's gigantic. I mean, first of all, from a historical perspective, Alan, that's the first win by an Edmonton Oil Kings team since 1966, when Al Hamilton and Jim Harrison, Ace Bailey, Ray Kanasiewicz's team beat Bobby Orr's Oshawa Generals in 6 games to win the Memorial Cup. The Oil Kings went back 2 subsequent times in the early 70s, and both times they lost both of their games. So they literally haven't won a game for almost half a century. So that's one thing. But within the context of the current tournament, to win a game in the round robin automatically assures you're in the playoff round. At bare minimum, if everything goes wrong, the Oil Kings will still be in a sudden death tiebreaker game next Thursday night. Not that they lose 2 games and the other team split the games in such a way that that there's 2 teams with one win apiece. That's the worst that can happen already. Where Shawinigan is already facing, geez, we got to beat either London or St. John or we're out.
And then London, I mean, there's no weak link in this. I mean, I think Shawinigan was, you know, probably at a disadvantage because of the long layoff, but they're a hell of a team too.
They gave the Oil Kings everything they could handle last night. They had the advantage on the shot clock. I think Edmonton probably had the better goaltending, and that may have been the difference. I mean, the call made the score closer than it should have been in one respect, but it was a close game, and all Kings were, well, I think, nervous, and it was the ice looked like it was pretty bad, and it was it was kind of a jittery game, I think, all the way around, refs included.
What I noticed was that the skill on the blue line for the Oil Kings really came to the fore, and I'm talking about Griffin Reinhart, but some really solid defensive play standing up on the blue line, Pesek as well. This is a nice group of defensemen the Oil Kings have.
They have seven very passable defensemen, and the top four are mostly excellent. Keegan Lowe, I think he struggled last night quite a bit. But he's generally been a pretty solid player these last two seasons at least. And then Pesek is a rock on the blue line. He's a skill, slick, puck-moving guy in the manner of Tom Gilbert at his best. And when he's on top of his game, he plays that style of game. And Martin Gernat, the Oilers' draft choice, he's just progressed in leaps and bounds. I think they got a real steal with that pick in the fifth round, that this guy is looking like he might be a real NHL prospect. That's all you can call any of them at this point. But you can see some real upside with him. And then, of course, Reinhart is slated to go top 10 in the NHL entry draft probably next month.
I was interested in watching Reinhart this year. I remember Paul Reinhart. I know you do, too. And what I had heard early on was that the scouts wanted him a little bolder, a little meaner. And he seemed to add that maybe, you know, in January, February. And you know, he's playing very confidently. This is a guy who maybe more than anybody, certainly on the Oil Kings, has improved his draft number based on his season and then his second season in the playoffs.
Yeah, he's picked up the physical game. I noticed quite a lot in the postseason. I got to all the home games but one, you know, for the Oil Kings, and Reinhart was really stepped up the physical game in the Brandon and Moose Jaw series in particular. There was one game where he had three or four big hits, but more often, just sort of once in a while, he would come out of the blue and really crank somebody, and that would kind of set the tone for the rest of the night, kind of, you know, that the old Larry Robinson thing. Hit him once early in the game, then you don't need to do it anymore after that.
Yeah, they remember the Larry Robinson. Remember the Dornhofer hit where he broke the boards, I think?
Yes.
Oh, man, that's a classic. The other guy who's capable of rattling some boards is Samuelson, another Oil King draft eligible. That was a hell of a snipe from a big man last night. The scouts had to have noticed that.
Yeah, that was a beautiful finish, wasn't it? His hands are kind of hit and miss, and they certainly were in hit mode at that particular moment. But he's not a real natural puck handler, but he's a real, you know, slugger along the boards, and he'll grind it out all night long. And he's got a quite a mean streak in it. Of course, honestly, being Ulf Samuelson's son. He got suspended four times this year in about under 50 WHL games. So obviously he doesn't quite know where the line is drawn at this point, but that's actually going to make him more of a desirable draft pick, having that kind of a resume, unfortunately, in one sense, that that's the way teams think, hey, we need a mean guy, and two suspensions, hey, that's good. We'll file off those rough edges, and we'll be left with a masher.
From my point of view, you know, and it leads into my next question, he's the kind of guy Oiler fans have been maybe looking for from the Oilers, and I was sort of hoping he'd slide into the early second round, but with the year he's having in the playoffs, he might slide into the first round.
He's been hanging in those in the 30s throughout much of the year, and he actually dropped a little bit in some of the rankings after he came over from Sweden to Edmonton at the midway point. I tell you, watching the guy play up there, it's not hard at all to project some of the things he does with filling holes of some of the things Edmonton Oilers need. Because, you know, the Oilers have had that the lack of a big power forward, big mean power forward for a long, long time. And they what Samuelson brings to the table is the sort of thing that Edmonton's looking for, whether they would choose that particular player. I'm sure they want a player like that.
Let's change gears a little bit, talk about some Oilers who are playing overseas in the World Hockey Championships. What is it about Canada and the quarterfinals? They had a flat tire again this year.
3 years in a row, and I felt bad for the four players in particular, two of them Oilers, Eberle and Dubnyk, and also Kane, Evander Kane and John Tavares, that have gone 3 years running, all 3 years of their professional career. And in fact, Eberle went over the year before he was a pro. And each year they've looked good in the round robin. Last year they were undefeated. This year they won their pool. And then come the quarterfinals and bang, something goes wrong. The last 2 years they had a one goal lead in the third period both times and lost it in the last part of the game. And it's the one game you just can't lose. And unfortunately it every year something seems to go wrong. This year the Slovaks, you think they're an overmatched team, but they look like a team on a mission. They took out the Czechs today 3-1. They're in the gold medal game, and I think they've all got a tattoo of Pavel Dimitrov's number 38 yeah. somewhere on their bodies, because they are playing an inspired game of hockey. Miro Chetan today was brilliant. 37-year-old former Oiler Miro Chetan was the player of the game.
He made that snipe on the goal he scored on. That was an impossible to stop and an impossible shot. It was perfect.
Mm-hmm.
So Hemsky was flying too for the Czechs. He didn't get a lot done, or at least when I saw the first two periods, he was flying around there. He and Peter Nedved, who's got to be 70, hopefully that bodes well for the Oilers in the fall if Hemsky's playing like that in the spring.
Well, Hemsky's, I thought he was getting his skating legs going down the stretch in the regular season for the Oilers, and he had a rough year, as we all know, and the shoulder probably had something to do with that, and the uncertain contract, and who knows what all motivates sometimes Alex Hemsky. He's a bit of an up and down player in some respects, but he played well down the stretch, and he had a super tournament for the Czechs. He had five goals, and he had
it's okay. We like dogs. Don't worry about it, Bruce.
Yeah, we're walking away from the barking dog. Sorry.
We like dogs and kids on the show, Bruce. Never worry about that, buddy.
All right. Well, that was Dusty.
There you go.
Your cameo appearance. So, anyways, Hemsky, he was flying, and he was flying in the third period too. And he was setting guys up. He was taking shots himself, and he seemed to be the straw stirring the drink for the Czechs. But they ran into a hot goalie and an inspired team, and at least they're in the semis, so they have another shot at a medal. Tomorrow they'll play the Finns for the bronze.
The Russians look like they could actually take over the world. Their game this morning against Finland, it took them a while, but Malkin looks like he belongs in a higher league.
Yeah, I don't know where that guy is. That we won the scoring championship and the Electric Heart Trophy, and when I watched the series against Philadelphia, I was thinking, what happened to him? And then the good Malkin is back for these. For these world championships, he's been sensational. I think he's had two hat tricks, and he's either tied or just pulled ahead of our man Patrick Thorsen in his scoring race at the world. 18 points. I don't know if Malkin had any assists today. Then I missed the early game. He got three goals. He had any assists. He's the full-out scoring leader. But Thorsen had 18 points in 8 games. Another former Oiler. They're all over this tournament. Chetan and Nedved and Thorsen. They're all playing great.
I think Thorsen deserves another shot back here. What do you think, buddy?
I would love to see him back here. I liked him when he was here. I could never understand why they put him on waivers and let him get away the way they did when they were going nowhere that season. It didn't make any sense. And I can't see him returning to Edmonton just because of that, but I can see him in the NHL and being a very useful player over here.
Well, and he did kind of hold up Toby Peterson's career, so that was why I think.
Yeah.
Let's talk about Tom Rennie a little bit, not renewed. Are you surprised by it, and do you think the Oilers will end up getting a better or more qualified coach to make that next step?
Boy, I don't know about more qualified. Rennie's got qualifications out the yin-yang. You know, he's a career coach that, you know, has got some pretty impressive things on his resume, even if it falls a little bit short of Stanley Cups and Olympic gold medals. He came as close as possible to one of those without taking one. He had... I'm a little bit surprised that they waited and kind of left it for a month. I don't know what was accomplished by that, to tell you the truth. It just doesn't look good. I'm really kind of in the middle on the whole thing as to I'm keen to see obviously who they hire next, and ask me then if I think he's better than Tom Rennie, because I'd put Rennie somewhere in the sort of middle of the pack of competent NHL caliber coaches.
I agree. I think that the rumor is Sutter, and I think that's a sideways step, not to be critical of Sutter, but, you know, Tom Rennie, you know, he has a good resume. He was obviously a teacher. Do you think there's a possibility that the Oilers just wanted a little more of a hard-ass coach without, you know, offending people by saying that? Do you know what I mean?
Yes, I do know what you mean, and that's often the rhythm in the NHL is you change coaches from a player's coach to a hard-ass and back to another player's coach to try and get different responses out of the player. So that may be what they have in mind. Depending on how where they are in the process, what they say they're doing is beginning interviews with a series of guys. And presumably some of those guys are hard asses and some of them are not. So we'll see who actually emerges from the fray. And maybe there is a favorite like Brent Sutter, who didn't get it done at the Worlds, but sounds like he made a positive impression with some people who might count.
Yeah, and I think that's exactly right. I think a guy like Hartikainen may benefit because of the aggressive forecheck and the work down low that Sutter likes to do. Would you agree with Hartikainen possibly being a guy who might benefit from a coaching move like that?
Well... I think just about all the Nordic players on the Oilers are going to be not unhappy to hear the change for whatever reason. And I don't think it has anything to do with Peter Forsberg in 94, but for whatever reason, Rennie and Swedes, it didn't seem to click with Pjärvi or with Omark certainly, or with Molander got his chance, but he didn't really... He didn't survive the season, and I think it's a coincidence. Like I wouldn't for a second suggest that there's anything to where these guys come from. But at the end of the day, the Oilers have got a few players of European background that might be looking forward to a chance to impress a new coach.
Whenever we have Bruce on from now on, we're going to have something called Astronomy Minute. Because Bruce, although he's a fine writer and clearly knows his hockey and very knowledgeable about hockey's past and present and future, also knows a lot about astronomy and the stars. So, Bruce, is there anything shaking up there in the next few weeks and months that we can look forward to?
There are two really, really important astronomical events coming up in the next couple of weeks. And one is actually tomorrow, Sunday, from just after 6 p.m., until quarter past eight, we're going to experience a fairly deep partial eclipse of the sun.
Okay.
So that'll be visible in the... I like the music. That'll be visible in the western sky, of course, the setting sun. And the moon is going to pass across the lower half of the sun and take a more than 50% chunk out of it for by the time we get to the midpoint of the eclipse at 10 past 7.
Okay.
So the other huge event coming up is extremely rare is what's called the transit of Venus, which the planet Venus passed directly across the face of the sun on Tuesday, June 5th. And that event will occur from just after 5 in the afternoon, right through until, just after 4 our time, right through until sunset. The transit will still be underway. And that's an event, a partial eclipse, you'll get another one in your lifetime. The transit of Venus, if you miss this one, well, there's another one scheduled in 2117 that you might want to mark on your calendar. There's only ever been six of them observed in the history.
I'm gonna have to
this point. So it's just one of those things that doesn't happen very often. for both of those events, because both occur against the face of the sun, you need some kind of safe solar viewing protection.
Okay.
And that would either be a number 14 welder's glass, or it would be a pair of solar glasses, such as the bonus pair that's included in the current issue of Sky News magazine that has details on these events, and eclipse glasses, just for anybody looking. Or else you could go to a place where there are properly equipped telescopes like we have at the observatory at the Telus World of Science, and we'll be observing both of those events there if the weather's clear. And that's always the caveat.
Exactly. I was going to use Fireball XL5 music, but they wouldn't let me. Bruce, thanks for this. Appreciate it.
Okay, thanks very much. Always a pleasure, Alan.
All right, Bruce McCurdy from Cult of Hockey, and clearly a guy who knows his stars, and a couple of events there. I liked when he started talking about welder's glasses. You know the guy's really hardcore when he's getting into, what you have to wear, and he wants to caution everybody. And anyway, we really appreciate Bruce's time, and he had some great input into the Edmonton Oilers and his thoughts on the coaching change, and I thought that he put it very well, Tom Rennie and his qualifications, and maybe a different style as opposed to more qualified. Maybe this is a case of the Edmonton Oilers want to go in a different direction about how, they frame the issue going into the game and that sort of thing. Now, we're going to take a break. We're going to talk about Taylor Hall at center after the break. This is Nation Radio, brought to you by Edmonton Motors.